stress. Everyone knows what it is. It's what happens to you when you're late for work and caught in a traffic jam, or when you have three small children all demanding your attention at once, or when you're working on a major project at your job. What most people don't know is that the word stress was only coined 40 years ago. It's a relatively recent concept, a product of our times. It's also considered by many physicians to be a major cause of many serious illnesses, such as tuberculosis and heart disease. So what is it about the mid-20th century that has made stress a household word? This is Frankly Speaking, and I'm Helen Ackerman for George Mason University. With us today to discuss stress and its relation to disease is Dr. Iris Prager-Decker, Assistant Professor of Health and Physical Education at George Mason University. Dr. Prager-Decker, people have been under stress ever since the first caveman faced up to a saber-toothed tiger. What's so special about today's stress?
The stressors that our ancestors faced were what we call physical stressors. When a caveman was walking along the street and came upon a saber-toothed tiger, he had one of two responses. He could either run away or stay there and fight. Our ancestors had physical stressors that they would have to have garnered all their abilities in order to survive. And that's what the stress response is. It's putting together all the body's components to fight or flee. Unfortunately, the kind of stress that we find ourselves under today is much more of the psychological base. We are not so much in life-threatening situations as we are in, are we going to get that job? Do we have enough money to survive? Much more psychological stressors facing a 21st century of industrial complex.
And yet those psychological stresses trigger off the same reaction as the physical stress.
Exactly. Our body only knows one way to react to stress, so stressors then are nonspecific for it. It could be something horrible like being in a burning building or a smoke alarm going off while you're in a building, or something as pleasurable as getting a promotion, planning your marriage, buying a new house, things that we think of in positive terms, but which we pay a toll for in terms of stress.
Now, you can have, if I'm hearing you correctly, good stress and bad stress, but as I understand it, both can affect your health.
That's exactly right. The body is trying to bring us back down to a normal state or a balanced state. We call that homeostasis. And in order to do that, it brings, it allows for the alarm reaction to these novel events and then tries to pull us back down, resist the event, so to speak, and so that we do not become exhausted in dealing with it.
When you read about stress, it's spoken about almost as though it in itself is a disease, and yet it's a part of normal everyday life. What is it about it that makes it so inimical to us?
That's a very good question. When it was first discovered that the body reacts to stress in very documentable ways, Hans Selye, who did the research, felt that he had discovered a new disease. But in essence, what happens when we are under stress is that we become vulnerable to a lot of other diseases that are either around because of pathological agents like virus and bacteria, or that this, the wear and tear that our body undergoes when experiencing stress can create illnesses that we now call stress-related or even psychosomatic diseases.
If we were to react in the same way the cavemen were programmed to react, and indeed we are too, if we could get up and run when we're under stress, or if we could hit somebody when we're under stress, we could react in some physical way, would it be less detrimental to us?
Well, yes.
Is it the suppression, I guess I'm asking?
It's not so much, we don't psychologically suppress it, we just know that those reactions are no longer available to us to react to stress, and in fact are not necessary. When you're sitting in traffic, you know, who are you going to punch out? You know, you squeeze the steering wheel, you build up all your tensions, your heart rate is accelerated, you're probably sweating, but yet there is no physical activity that we could get involved in. And the reason that our body reacts that way, one might think that, well, this is a really negative way for the body to react, was that originally it was a survival technique. In order to have lasted the thousands of years that our nervous system has lasted, it was very necessary to build up to get all our muscles ready to get as much energy available to our systems. But it just doesn't follow that the kinds of stress we are under today are adapted to our body. In other words, we have a primitive nervous system and a high technology stress that we are living with.
Now, there's been a documented connection between stress and various diseases. Are there specific diseases that are really related to stress?
Well, yes. There are some that are so connected that it's a very obvious visual observation. For example, if under stress we are elevating our blood pressure, which is necessary to get nutrients to the brain and to get blood to all the muscles, we have an artificially elevated blood pressure. If this happens 40 to 60 times a day, and if we do document that an individual is exposed to that many novel situations in a day, if we have a vulnerable system, if our cardiovascular system is just a little bit weakened, then we may have our blood pressure that does not return to normal, that stays elevated. So hypertension is directly related to stress, as is coronary heart disease and atherosclerosis. Other diseases that are directly related are ulcerations of the stomach, ulcerations of the colon that we call colitis. There are tension headaches and low back pain that are related because of our holding our muscles at a higher level of tension. And we've discovered that migraines are related, certain skin disorders such as eczema and psoriasis are related. And we have found that diseases such as asthma, tuberculosis, arthritis, glaucoma, and even cancer can be made worse when individuals seem to have suffered stress in their lives.
Is there an actual physiological connection between stress and disease? Have scientists been able to say, yes, this is what happens in the body when it's stressed, which leaves it more vulnerable to disease?
Yes, there have been studies done on the physiology of stress, which were done by Selye as long as 40 years ago, that documented that, number one, glands that produce antibodies are shrunken, that we are no longer producing the amount of white blood cells, for example, that we need to ward off infection.
This is when we're under stress.
That's right. And I'm talking about prolonged stress. I'm not talking about stepping into the curb and jumping back. I'm talking about working under dissatisfying conditions and being in a marriage that doesn't seem to be effective. When you're under prolonged stress, you seem to have a breakdown in this autoimmune system so that you are more susceptible to what we consider agents of disease like viruses and bacteria. But there are also other problems that occur in the body that are not so easily identified as pathological illnesses. Most of them are chronic illnesses, and there are really strong indicators that stress is a high risk factor in most of the chronic illnesses. And I think it's interesting to note that 75 to 80 years ago, we didn't die of the same illnesses that we die of today. In the early 1900s, influenza, tuberculosis, pneumonia, infectious diseases killed most of our population. Whereas today we're looking at diseases that are lifestyle oriented, that are chronic, such as heart disease, cancer. These are the infectious diseases of yesterday. And although, of course, they are not contagious, we certainly seem to have an epidemic of them.
I think most people are probably familiar with the life event scale of assessing stress, but would you describe it briefly for our listeners?
Certainly. Holmes and Ray developed a scale that they have it's been called the life event scale. And on that scale of 43 events, you can check off things that have occurred to you within the last 6 months to a year. And they range from such high scoring events such as death of a spouse or death of a family member, down through the mid-valued activities such as marriage or incurring a mortgage, to such minimal events such as experiencing Christmas or a vacation or a traffic violation. And what individuals do is they add up their scores. And we have found through research that those people who have scored in the upper one-third, potentially, the upper one-third of the rates, find themselves more vulnerable to illness than those people that scored in the mid-range or in the low range. What Holmes and Ray did not take into consideration, however, was the fact that people can intervene in the events that they must live through so that they are not quite as stressful as they might be for another individual. To make a point, I have had students who have scored very, very high, but were also involved in jogging, meditation, yoga, counseling of one type or another, and who were coping with their stress, whereas I've seen other people with low scores who had no outlet for expressing their dissatisfaction or to just vent some of the stress that they were under, and they could and have become ill.
Let's talk a little bit about coping with stress. What's probably the most practical and easiest method of learning to cope with stress for most people?
I think it's important to have an awareness, to understand your body, and be able to know as soon as possible that you are going through a stressful situation, again, whether it be negative or positive. And at that time, it is possible for you to intervene. Your body does not have to dredge up, if you will, all the potential nutrients. It doesn't have to rob your own self of the antibodies. And to intervene in that response, there are several tools. One very simple one is physical activity, so that even if you are building byproducts to react to stress, you burn them up. You actually use them up just as if you had to run or fight in a given situation. But for those of us who are more sedentary, there are some very simple techniques such as meditation, which Herbert Benson popularized as the relaxation response. There's deep muscle relaxation where you listen to a tape and perform certain tension and relaxation exercises, and then biofeedback. And they have all been found to reduce stress. One reason is you cannot be relaxed and be under stress at the same time. They're physiologically opposites.
So if you're physically relaxed, you cannot be psychologically stressed?
That's right. I mean, it's not going to take the stressor away, but it is going to change the way your body is reacting to that stressor.
Well, Dr. Prager-Decker, it seems obvious in the 20th century and moving towards the 21st century, we are all going to have to brush up on our relaxation techniques. Thank you very much for being with us today. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public service program produced by George Mason University, production coordinator Pat Ping. For information about our guest or this program, please call 703-323-2138. I'm Helen Ackerman at George Mason University, the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.